Hi, my name is Jess Graham, and I'm the community builder at the Transnational Institute, and I'm here to ask for your help. The work of TNI is important and cannot be done without financial resources. If you like the work we do, I encourage you to support TNI. You will help us to continue strengthening international social movements with research, reliable information, sound analysis, and constructive proposals that advance progressive, democratic policy change and common solutions to global problems. We need your help to retain a loud and independent voice in this environment. Please go to tni.org and at the top of the page, click Support Us. You can make a one-off donation or sign up as a friend of TNI and pledge a regular contribution that will help us to continue the vital work being done. Thanks a lot.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the State of Power podcast from the Transnational Institute. My name is Sean Macheza. This is episode 2 in our series on borders and migration. In episode 1, we looked at some of the reasons for the building of militarized borders and examined the systemic causes of migration, showing how people are displaced as a result of corporate crimes, conflict, poverty, and climate change. We showed that migration cannot be divorced from the legacy of colonialism and the impact today of corporate capitalism and imperialism. We heard stories from people whose traumatic journeys were shaped by those forces. However, there is one group of interests that has only benefited from the refugee crisis. From Europe to the United States to Israel, there are corporations that make money from providing the infrastructure of borders, both virtual and physical. Today, we will take a close look at the military and security companies that provide the equipment to border guards, the surveillance technology to monitor frontiers, and the IT infrastructure to track population movements. We will also look at how they are implicated in a global restructuring of labor that has led to injustice, suffering, and death. It's important to expose these border security profiteers and to examine the influence they wield. What our research at TNI has shown is that far from being passive beneficiaries of EU and US money, these corporations are actively encouraging a growing securitization of Europe and US borders, and they are willing to provide ever more draconian technologies to do this. Nick Buxton works with TNI's War and Pacification Program. I asked him to explain the background of the research that informs this episode.
The first report that TNI really started to look at this was to look at the European security research. And that's where we saw that at the same time as austerity was being imposed on Europe, the only thing that was consistently supporting was going up was budgets for security funding. And that's where we realized that this consensus that we needed more and more security, initially for the war on terror, but then broadened to anyone who was considered a threat, in quotation marks, to Europe, was becoming dominant. And a similar process was happening in other parts of the world. And this is what you see as the war on terror has unfolded initially with against Muslims, then others have been broadened into the people who pose a threat.
Yeah.
And if you look at military strategies for climate change, they also look at this as a threat scenario.
Yeah.
And they say that migration is going to be a threat. And so everything becomes a threat. So this is that really started to lay the ground for some of the work where we started to look firstly at the European Union situation and who was winning the main contracts to build the borders of all kinds, the physical borders, the maritime borders, and also the digital borders that control people's movements. And that was our first report, the Border Wars Report, which looked at the arms companies that were mainly benefiting. Then it became clear that we were seeing a picture where Europeans' borders didn't stop at the edges of the 27 nations. It extended right out into Northern Africa and even further. And that's where we launched the report, Expanding the Fortress, that looked at the way this fortress had been. And again, who were the key players in that process? And there are many of the same players, arms, security, IT companies. And then out of that emerged our next report, which has been the one we've just launched, called More Than a Wall, which looks at that process in the US. These are the elements that are filling a picture about who are the key players, who's benefiting, who's losing, and what are the processes under play.
The arms and security industry has successfully captured the funding provided for research in security issues, setting the agenda for research, carrying it out, and then benefiting from the consequent contracts. Since 2002, the EU has provided 4.5 billion euros of funding for member state border security. Across the Atlantic, the US provides the single largest market for border security corporations, which have reaped handsome rewards under Democratic and Republican administrations alike. US budgets for border and immigration control massively increased from the mid-1980s, a trend that's been accelerating ever since. These budgets rose from $350 million in 1980 to $23.7 billion in 2018. In other words, budgets have increased by more than 6,000% since 1980. And who are the companies benefiting from this budget bonanza? In Europe, the prime beneficiaries are massive arms companies such as Airbus, Leonardo, Thales, and Safran, as well as technology giant Indra. Most perverse of all, three of these companies are also some of the biggest arms sellers to the Middle East and North African region, fueling the conflicts that are the cause of many of the refugees. In other words, these companies are creating the crisis and then profiting from it. TNI's recent report on the US border industry, More Than a Wall, showed that arms companies were again the big winners, such as Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Raytheon, as well as other security and technology companies such as G4S and IBM. Todd Miller is a journalist and researcher based in Tucson, Arizona, and worked on the U.S. border industry report. I asked him to explain how the security industry has grown at such an exponential rate.
When you take the total amount on the U.S.-Mexico border already, there's about 650 miles of walls and barriers. And nearly all of it has been constructed via a private company of some sort. And then with the Trump administration and its insistence on constructing more, well, there's other construction companies that have been hired. So that's one thing. Yeah. And then the technologies are one of the biggest places where companies are constantly, there's constant what they call requests for proposals and companies vying for different contracts from sophisticated cameras to radar systems to motion sensors, and all these technologies are in constant innovation, right? The motion sensors of 10 years ago, by motion sensors I mean they implant these sensors under the ground, and then so if you step on them or trip them, as they say, then it will set off a sort of alarm in a command and control center. And the ones of 10 years ago didn't have camera systems. Now, a lot of these motion sensors are equipped with cameras, so they'll like take your picture, or I think some of them are getting video. So that just shows, like, even when a technology is installed, they're constantly wanting to improve, quote unquote, the technology. And the camera systems are night vision, thermal energy, infrared. They're constantly can see further and further away, clearer and clearer. You have surveillance towers that are in communication with each other. That go to in these control centers. You have monitor systems. All of this usually is constructed by some sort of company that won a contract to do so. And those sorts of contracts just keep coming. It's like there was one and it's satisfied and that's that. No, there's one, then there's another, and there's another, and there's another, and there's another, and they keep building and building and building and building and building. And that is one of the huge things underneath the border system, that there's a whole big corporate enterprise that's profit making, that wants to make contracts, and that also has influence in places like Washington with policymakers to make sure that the border keeps expanding and expanding and getting bigger and bigger.
The provision by these border corporations of security services is never a one-off contract. The seemingly unspoken rule is that you can never have enough security. The companies count on growth in the industry and can confidently project growing revenues in presentations to their investors. Todd explains.
Many of the companies are military manufacturers and arms dealers and weapons manufacturers that have already have clout in Washington over many years with the military and getting military contracts. And so these sorts of companies already have, you know, well-defined lobbying arm. They know very well how to lavish campaign contributions upon appropriate people and appropriate committees, giving campaign contributions to key members in the appropriation committee, as well as lobbying when it comes time for the budgets to be thought about. So they wield tremendous influence in Washington, and then that's the argument is then is, well, it's a complex, right? The influence and the growth, and then more contracts, and then more growth and more contracts, a thing that might be hard to stop.
TNI, in its report, Border Wars, showed a similar pattern of lobbying and influence within the European Union by the arms and security industry. By joining together in powerful business lobbying associations, such as the European Organization for Security, EOS, as well as constantly interacting with EU officials through research projects, policy dialogues, industry days, and lobbying visits, they've become an extremely successful lobby and won unprecedented budgets for border militarization. Nick, my colleague at TNI, gives his own insight into how these security companies have been able to thrive at such a time of social insecurity.
The issue is we've seen the playing out of neoliberalism, which has really emphasized individualism. It's undone community bonds. It's created austerity, which has undermined public services. It's reduced that social fabric. And so it's created a sense of alienation because people don't feel connected, but also insecurity. At the same time, when you have a very powerful industry rising up that offers security, that offers a military solutions, with a very powerful discourse. I mean, it's not just about their influence on politics, it's also the influence on their media.
Yeah.
It's the money that goes into right-wing populist groups. There, you have a very powerful convergence of an insecurity being manipulated by very powerful forces.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're seeing. I'm talking about it very much from a US and European perspective, but in every country around the world, politicians have realized that at various points and have manipulated those that insecurity and have provided the security, which is a false sense of security,
mm-hmm.
but one that's quite attractive and provides kind of simple answers.
There are few other places in the world where security has been prioritized and provided as a simple answer to a crisis than in Israel. Companies such as Magal and Elbit Systems have not only thrived in building Israel's own walls and security systems in the occupied territories, in particular its West Bank separation wall and the Gaza border with Egypt. They have then used this experience to garner contracts all over the world. In fact, Israel's defense and security firms have become one of its most prominent export industries. Israeli companies are the only non-European receivers of research funding, thanks to a 1996 agreement between Israel and the EU. And they've also played a role in fortifying the borders of Bulgaria and Hungary. They also provide a lot of border services to the United States. Marin Mantovani is International Outreach Coordinator for the Stop the Wall campaign and the Palestinian Land Defense Coalition, a network of Palestinian social movements. Informed by how events have unfolded in Palestine, she begins by pointing out how today's society has progressively grown accustomed to walls as a mechanism of control, and how this was not always the case.
I remember when in 2002, Israel built its apartheid wall. It was a shock. At the beginning, we had to come with PowerPoints and photographs and try to convince people that we were not completely lying and that it was true that Israel was building over 800 kilometers of up to 8 meter high cement walls and high-tech walls. Nobody wanted to believe it. It was an outcry. It went to the International Court of Justice, who evidently declared the wall illegal. And, well, now, 15, 20 years after, what we're looking at is that walls have become electoral campaign promise of the U.S. president. And it seems that every democracy around the world wants to have their own wall, or democracy or non-democracy wants to have their own wall. So out of that experience of a globalization of walls comes actually the interest not only to look into the question of Palestine and Israel's wall, but more broader, how that connection actually is happening.
The Stop the Wall campaign recently put together an anthology reader called A World Without Walls, which brings together a global analysis of the structures and interconnections that contribute to a world of walls. I asked Marin to share some of their insights on the connection between the situation in Palestine and the role Israeli companies play worldwide.
We started up from looking into the fact that Israel not only was gaining legitimacy for its apartheid and occupation policies and its colonial policies, including the walls, in the very moment that the whole concept and the methodology of walls went global, but that it was as well a huge market for exactly those Israeli companies, these Israeli military companies that were building the walls. We started understanding how Israel was exporting its technology to the rest of the world in order then to look further into how is what Israel is offering actually benefiting a current global political dynamic. When you look at Magal Security, for example, one of the Israel's wall-building companies, the CEO at the time of the company, Sarah Kush, at a certain point said very clearly, anybody can give you a very nice PowerPoint, but few can show you how a complex project such as Gaza that is constantly battle-tested. Because evidently what I think is important to understand as well, Israel is not only building a wall in the West Bank. The entire project of besieging the Gaza Strip is a system of walls that started up long before the Second Intifada in 1996. And Israel's walls are continuing as well across the rest of its borders towards Egypt and other places.
The technology that these companies test out in the context of the military occupation in the West Bank and in Gaza is then repackaged and sold for civilian purposes. Marin believes that this blurring of military and civilian space is taking place everywhere and means that we are all affected.
Well, I don't think there is anybody that is not affected by these walls. Because you have that nexus between what we are actually having now in what we previously thought was a civilian space. And I do think we need to stop believing that in our world we have still a differentiation between a war zone and a peace zone, the concepts and the technology from the war zone is being used every day on us, even in the civilian areas. And Israel here, with its corporations and its government that is pushing its corporations to take the investments and the technology from the war zone and promote it in the civilian areas in order to make money out of it, is probably a very interesting model. Israel is not the only one to do it, but they're a really good case study in this sense.
You're listening to the State of Power podcast from the Transnational Institute. I'm your host, Sean Macheza. This is episode 2 of our 3-part series on borders and migration. Brid Brennan works with TNI's economic justice team and with the Transmigrant platform. Brid explains how corporations not only gain from building walls, but also from the consequences of the walls, such as the creation of cheaper labor for their operations.
If we look at the current economic trade agreements and investment agreements, which have built in privileges actually for the operations of corporations in particular, who operate in terms of toxification of the environment, destruction of the community, and so on, in a way raising livelihood, that's one major factor. But another is, and we've seen this over the last 20 years, I guess, increasingly, the question of global restructuring of labor, where we have major outsourcing of areas of production from the global north, and in this case from Europe, to other parts of the global south. And we have the reverse, which is very seldom talked about. It means that there are whole swaths of labor that cannot be outsourced. That's agriculture, that's care work, that's domestic work, that's construction work, that's oil rig work on the North Sea. This requires labor, but in the European context, well, we have advocated a reality that brings numbers of workers to the European continent, but no provision for their rights, neither their labor rights nor their resident rights. And it creates a toxic environment where that migrant labor is given at huge price to people in terms of underpaid or very little pay for the labor work itself, very precarious livelihood context, very unacceptable housing conditions, living conditions. I mean, we could look at the fields of tomato growers or strawberry growers in the south of Spain, where 20,000, for example, Moroccan migrant women workers come every year on a seasonal basis and so on.
From the Mexican farm workers in Canada and the US, to seasonal Ghanaian tomato pickers in Italy, to Zimbabweans working on farms in South Africa, millions of people are caught up in precarious conditions, working for far less than minimum wage. Hasha Walia is an anti-racist activist in Canada, and she wrote a book, Border Imperialism. She argues that borders actually funnel people into unregistered, precarious, and seasonal work to the benefit of corporations. Here she gives some of her insight on the impact of borders on wages and labor.
So this form of labor exploitation is completely dependent on the border. And I think we need to really emphasize and look at this because, you know, one of the things that we're seeing a lot in the context of neoliberal globalization is some leftist commentators think that we need a border to protect workers, right? So we're seeing this argument emerge that under neoliberal globalization, the state has withered away. Therefore, in order to protect workers as a form of worker protection, we need to make sure our border is fortified to protect workers and protect wages. And I would argue that is absolutely the wrong analysis, that the border works in the interests of capital, not in the interests of workers. And one of the clearest examples of that is the ways in which the border creates a segmentation of labor through temporary labor migration to lower the wage floor for everybody, right? Because once you lower the wage floor for migrant workers, then the wage floor is lowered for everybody. And migrant workers are basically the flip side of outsourcing, right? It's the labor that you can't outsource to the so-called
you give to the migrant.
You insource, absolutely. You insource that work, retail work, construction work, et cetera. So insourcing and outsourcing are flip sides of the same coin, and they rely on a global division of labor that is reinforced by the border. And so instead of saying, you know, let's fortify our border against migrant workers and that will somehow protect the wage floor, no, absolutely not. We protect the wage floor by making sure all workers have full rights to labor, labor rights, have full rights to labor protection, and have a living wage across this world. And dismantling borders is such a key part of that.
It is easy to think of walls as being far away, somewhere in Palestine, or at the margins of Europe, or far away at the Mexico border. But as Marin points out, none of us can escape their consequences.
You're affected by the walls even if you have never seen or touched one, because it is an ideology and a concept of shaping society and shaping power. So in front of this world of walls, there is no option to say it doesn't touch me, and there is no option to say I do not want to choose. In front of those walls, you necessarily need to take a position on which side of these walls you stand. Whether you are on the side of those that are building from the Israeli apartheid to the global necropolitics, to the anti-migration policies, to the general supremacist rise of exclusionary racist policies that are slowly killing us all, or if you're standing on the other side of those walls and actually want to tear them down and build a society of justice, freedom, and equality.
You're listening to the State of Power podcast from the Transnational Institute. This concludes part two of a series on border wars, placing the migration crisis in perspective. Watch out for episode three, where we look at how communities across the world are reaching out and building bridges instead of walls. TNI is an international research and advocacy institute committed to building a just, democratic, and sustainable planet. For more than four decades, we have supported the major social movements of the day, providing them with research, ideas, as well as logistical support. We're based in Amsterdam, and we believe there are alternatives to the world as it currently exists. We hope you believe this too. Thank you so much for listening this far, and many thanks to our guests on the podcast. TNI's material is all free, but we would greatly appreciate your help to keep doing the work we do. If you'd like to find out more about TNI's work, please look us up at www.tni.org and click on Support Us. You can also find us on social media at TN Institute on Twitter and Transnational Institute on Instagram and Facebook.